Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I am indeed Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I'm darn glad you're here with us today. When you get a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. All sorts of cool, fun stuff, including my most recent car reviews and the 2026 Consumer Guide Best Buys are now posted.
Yeah, I saw you broke your news on a different podcast.
I didn't know when they were going to publish that.
Yeah, it's already up.
Yeah, so they actually got to it slightly before me, hours before me.
I don't know. Are you talking about it today? Because we didn't have scheduled to talk about it today.
No. But it's up.
Okay.
It's up if people want to check that out.
I'm just saying, you broke your embargo on somebody else's podcast.
The We Are Motor Driven podcast. You can listen to it if you want to listen to the podcast there. Jill and I will be talking about the Best Buys later, probably next year, January, February. We'll get to it.
You can tell you're really, really excited to get to it.
I am. It's kind of a marathon. I'm glad we get it out there. I'm glad people listen to it. It's one of our most popular podcasts every single year.
Okay.
So it's good. But it's kind of a hassle to get through 35 to 40 vehicles in 60 minutes.
Okay.
Like, you just don't do them justice.
Okay.
So I dread it slightly, but I'm glad we do it.
Okay.
And I appreciate you helping me with it. Speaking with things, you and I were just fighting off air about the Oxford comma. But another thing I'm mad at you about...
I do not like the Oxford comma. I have to say that. And have we introduced me yet? I don't think we have.
That voice is Jill Simonello, a contributing editor here at ConsumerGuide.com, North American Car of the Year juror, and general busybody.
Who hates the Oxford comma.
Whatever.
Yeah, I even have my ChatGPT set up to not use the Oxford comma. And every time it now talks to me, it's like, here's your answer without the Oxford comma.
If I cared this much about the argument, we'd talk about what the Oxford comma actually is, but I don't care that much.
Clearly.
This is why I'm mad at you.
Okay.
This is weeks old.
Was I right again?
No. Oh. Well, it's not a right or wrong thing. No, it is a wrong thing.
Okay. Yeah. I was wrong.
Yeah. There's a thing here, a social thing that you didn't do.
Oh.
So we won an award.
Yes.
In Texas.
We did.
And to the best of my knowledge, you've never mentioned this to me, and you kept the trophy at home, so I didn't even get to see it.
I've mentioned it to you as soon as I learned we won the award. I think I might have even sent you a picture.
I haven't seen the trophy.
And I definitely posted a picture online.
And I think you're afraid I'm going to take it home, or we're going to have it enshrined here at the studio.
Well, I'm definitely not bringing it here, but I'm more than happy to show photos.
I brought you a present today.
What, a donut with icing?
No, we'll talk about the present later. but tell us about the award. What did we win?
Yeah, so we actually won second place for the best podcast.
Not first.
Mm. Second place.
Who won first?
I don't know. It wasn't anything I ever heard of.
Oh, I was just wondering if it was good.
I don't know. It wasn't anything
I
heard of.
If it's like John McElroy, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you know.
All right.
But it was second place for the Texas Auto Writers Association podcast award. And what I thought, the episode that I submitted for entry was the one that we interviewed Chris Fuel,
right,
the CEO for Chrysler. And what I thought was really funny is the episode, the person who won above us, the comment of why they won was because they get very good guests. And I was like, who's better than a CEO of an automaker?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, so that was a good episode, I thought.
Yeah.
I try to listen to every episode after the fact, and I just sort of rank them in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And then I beat myself up over my own performance. But yeah, so that's nice. We won an award.
Like, you know, you use the Oxford comma when you're speaking.
How do you even do that?
I'm just saying.
I don't even know if you can make that audible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we won a nice award, so that's cool.
We did. It was really cool. So
and to be clear, you're keeping the trophy.
Of course, it has my name on it.
Wow, that hurts.
Well, I'm the member. You're not.
Oh, all right.
But I did. In the official award notes, it says Jill Simonello and co-host Tom Appel.
That's fine.
Yes.
Okay. Congratulations to us.
Yes.
All right. Our friend Pillboy on X apologizes to producer Randy for what he did to the donut options.
Okay.
Remember, he challenged us to mix up the donut
yes.
thing, and then he wasn't happy with it, and he figured Randy got the worst of it.
Oh,
Oh. So he Pillboy apologizes to you, sir. All right. In more fun news, I finally drove the Nissan Leaf.
Okay, yes.
It's very good.
Yes.
There's really nothing there not to like, except the interior's a little cheap.
See, and I didn't find that. Are you in the top tier?
I am.
Okay, see, I didn't think
that
at all.
A lot of hard plastic, but it's modern looking, it's clean, it's a nice design. And frankly, after you buy the car, no one touches your dashboard.
No, except an auto journalist. And it's affordable, and I just I didn't think that the interior was inappropriate for the vehicle.
Okay. Just my take. I thought the interior was a little cheap. But here's the thing. We talked a little bit about how there's CCS charging on one side and NACS charging on the other. Basically, old school versus Tesla. Mm-hmm. Here's what I didn't understand.
Okay.
And I needed to understand because it really messed up my weekend.
Okay.
And it's my bad. But you can only level one or level two through the old CCS system.
Yes.
You cannot level three.
Correct.
Level three is only through... an adapter or an actual Tesla charger. So I just, silly me, just drove to a Tesla station. There's one near my house, like 10 stations. There were six taken. I pull up. First thing, problem is they need to change some of these Tesla stations. The cord is very short because it is designed for Teslas to back into.
Right.
And there's no reaching around the car.
No.
That's the first problem. The second is that these chargers are not set up to take a credit card. You have to have the app. So you have to be set up with Tesla before you charge.
Okay.
I didn't know this, and I ran really low on the battery.
Okay.
Limped home, about 8% left of the battery, charged overnight in my driveway.
Uh-huh.
Saturday night.
Okay.
Why was this a bad thing?
110.
We got 10 inches of snow overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't back my car out of the driveway. All the stuff's up front, the motor's up front, you know, and it's front-wheel drive. There's no all-wheel drive. So it took me like half an hour to get the car out of my driveway. Oh, this was Friday night into Saturday. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I still didn't have anywhere to charge. I charged using the 110 outlet and whatever. It actually, this car is so efficient, the battery's small enough that you actually get meaningful charge overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I picked up like 30 miles, something like that.
Okay.
I did it again Sunday night. So hopefully whoever picked up the car today got it back to the, back to the office.
Right.
So that's just my little story. You need an adapter.
You do.
If you want to charge at someplace other than a Tesla station. That is the moral of the story.
So why didn't you set yourself up on Tesla? You're already in the spot.
It just seemed complicated. Also, here's a little piece of bad news.
Okay.
Kohl's, the department store.
Yep.
And Whole Foods used to have Volta chargers.
Okay.
They were free level two chargers in front of the store. And I'm like, I am going to go to the Volta charger in front of Kohl's, pick up a couple of garden burgers at Portillo's, and read me some automotive news for a couple of hours, and pick up 50 miles of range. That was my plan for free.
Mm-hmm.
They're not free anymore.
Yeah.
They're hooked up to Shell.
Okay.
And you have to go to the Shell app, and it's not clear on the Shell app how you get to this, and it was all very messy and confusing, so.
Yes.
That's my story.
Okay.
That's my story. It had nothing to do with the Leaf. It had to do with planning ahead, and I didn't do it.
Well, so this is actually a really good transition into the review, if you're ready to do that.
Oh, wait, review?
Of the Lucid Gravity.
Oh, okay. I thought for some reason you wanted to talk about the more about the Leaf. After the break, maybe I want to talk about the Jeep Recon a little bit.
Okay.
All right. Well, not after the break, after the quiz.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Gravity. You drove that last week. Tell us what that is.
I did. So the Lucid Gravity is the new SUV from Lucid. So they already have the Lucid Air out. And the Gravity is finally out. And it has
The brand's second car ever.
Yes. It has two-row, three-row options. The vehicle I had actually only had two rows. And I drove it to Indianapolis. And the reason why you talking about charging was a good transition into the Gravity review is the Monroney said it had 400, it should get up to 407 miles of range. I could only ever charge it to 270.
Oh.
So I don't know what happened there. I don't know if I got the wrong Monroney. I don't know if, like, it had about 1,000 miles on it. Maybe it just hadn't broken in yet.
I have the base range here at something huge.
Yeah.
Was it 540 miles? The base range, fully loaded, I presume, in ideal weather conditions, is really high. Okay, I don't have it in front of me, but I thought it was over 500 miles.
Yeah, so I have questions I need to ask. But so I drove to Indianapolis. I was able to get there with like 31% of the battery left, which was fine. And so it's a 200-mile drive. And when I got to the hotel, which had it was a Courtyard Marriott in Fishers, Indiana, and it previously had a charger that was free. Not free anymore.
Oh.
And so I pulled in and I tried to plug in and I had an adapter. So this is it has an AUX port Tesla charger. And so I plugged in the adapter, plugged in the cord, scanned the code. And I was like, okay, I'm fine. I can pay. I don't care. Like, I just want to charge and get some range on here before I have to drive again. Did not work. So I had to then go, I went to an Electrify America station. I was like, well, maybe the adapter isn't working. Maybe that's my problem. I'm like, I'll go to an Electrify America station. So go to a CCS charger, fast charger, and see if that works. It did. So the adapter with the Electrify America, and the great news is once I plugged in, Lucid must be on a free trial or whatever for charging. It just started charging, so I didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, interesting.
And the only problem is this should get up to between like 250 and 400 kilowatts of charge time or charging speed. I only ever got about 120.
Was cold out.
So it was. It was cold.
But that still seems very low.
Yeah. And then the second day when I went, I had to go back and get more charge on it to come back home. And
you said you only got how much range?
Like 270 was the max.
That's
I could get
limiting.
On it. And so then...
I found the number, by the way. It should take up to 516 miles
yeah,
of range.
And on my Monroney, it says 407.
So you must have the bigger wheels or something.
Yeah.
Or is that a Touring or Grand Touring?
It was a Grand Touring.
Okay, that's why. More power.
So I don't know. It was interesting. And then I had to put more on. And then I could only get it... The second time, it only went up to 100 kilowatt charge speed. So I was just
okay.
Yeah. But it was just, it was a less than ideal charging experience. But that was pretty much one of the worst things that I can say about the vehicle.
So we should talk about this for a second. Some of the slowest level three chargers out there still charge at 50 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a battery of between 100 and 200 kilowatts, that can be a little slow.
Right.
But a lot of these cars are capable of much faster charging.
Right,
right now, I drove here in the Hummer.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the Hummer pickup truck. That'll charge it up to 350 kilowatts,
mm-hmm.
which will make pretty short work of charging even its monstrous battery.
Right, in ideal conditions.
Yes, yes. And I've seen some relatively fast charging. I had the Lucid Air that I charged. I can't remember where I charged it, but it was an Electrify America station. And that charged it, I want to say, almost 200.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty fast.
Okay.
Like a little charge time got a lot done.
Yeah.
Like not a whole lot more than going to a gas station.
Right.
So that's the good news. So tell us about this vehicle. This is only their second vehicle.
Right.
It does not come in. Originally, it was going to come in cheaper
right.
than the other cars, but it really doesn't.
No, the vehicle I drove was $111,000.
Okay, yeah. And they start at 90, I think. They start at 81.
Yeah.
So they're pretty expensive. You drove the mid-level. The top level is 141.
Yeah.
Starting.
Yeah.
So that gets pretty expensive. Worth the money?
You know what? For the most part, I'm going to say yes. So I took my parents-in-law to Indianapolis with us for Thanksgiving. And so four butts in seats. And we all really thought it was very comfortable.
Okay.
And plenty of legroom in the back. My parents-in-law were very happy about the fact that they could adjust their climate themselves. So turn on their own heated seat, turn up the heat. My husband, I think, was the lone person in the car who had his... HVAC set to like 68 degrees and the rest of us were all at 85. So
yeah.
He was like a little cone
the 68 degree guy.
He was a little cone of cold. It was fast. It was smooth. I set the cruise control at the speed limits on the way back. And, it said that I would arrive back in Chicago at, I want to say 28% of the battery. And I arrived back in Chicago at 28% of the battery.
That's pretty accurate.
It was incredibly accurate. And what is really nice about that is it was 28 degrees outside. So it was cold. For it to be accurate in the cold, I was very impressed with.
We are seeing less cold weather battery range degradation than we used to.
That is correct.
I'm not hearing a lot from manufacturers about this, but they're managing the battery better.
Yes.
Which is interesting. One of the interesting things about this vehicle, too, like whatever it cost. How much did you say yours was?
111.
Kind of a bargain for 560 horsepower.
Right.
And EVs are kind of skewing this thing.
Yeah.
But we don't talk much about the horsepower anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Only because these numbers are absurd.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of power for passing and merging and pulling away from a stoplight. Mm-hmm. Like lots and lots of it. You never want for power.
Nope.
But this, all the power over like 400 horsepower seems largely unnecessary in almost anything. But there it is.
Yeah.
And if you get to the Dream Edition, 1,070 horsepower.
Good golly.
For what?
What do you do with that? What do you even do with that?
For what?
I don't know. But no, I mean, this had all the power I wanted for, you know, and I, like I said, I pretty much set my cruise control. We drove back on Friday and there was no traffic. So I set it at 70. The speed limit is at 70. And we essentially cruised without needing to pass or hit traffic the entire way. And it just, it doesn't have Apple CarPlay yet, but it's coming in as an over-the-air update. So we listened to the radio. We got to listen to the Bears game on the way back, and
I heard good things.
Yeah, they won. It was shocking, but we listened to the Bears game on XM radio, and it was good. So the sound was good. My husband was able to adjust it because my father-in-law was the one who really wanted to listen to the game, and I could just stare at blank space and drive, and I was fine. So he adjusted the sound so that it was louder in my father-in-law's seat than it was in any of the rest of our seats, which was great. And
now, did you fix that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, because yeah, that really angers me when I get a car. I call it Kirk Belling. Kirk doesn't generally, he's a fellow auto journalist. He's been on the show a couple of times. Generally doesn't mess with the balance and fade, which is the left to right and north to south of the sound. But he screws with the bass.
Oh.
And it's like he turns down the treble on the bass all the way up. He's a cretin.
It's all about the bass, man.
And you get into a car that should have an awesome stereo, and you're like, well, this sounds like crap. Why does this sound like crap? And you go into the system, and you're like, Kirk was here.
It's been Kirk Belled.
Yeah.
But no, so we readjusted it. I did have a couple of kind of glitchy things happen while I was driving it, and I'm chalking it up to like pre-production early edition software. When I drove here, I didn't have any sound, so I had to perform a hard reset on the screens, and then I had my sound come back.
Man, the digital age is weird. I've had that happen to me in cars.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I couldn't place a phone call. Like, I couldn't hear or be heard. There was no radio. Like, the sensors weren't beeping. There was, like, literally no sound. And then I had a beeping issue. There was an alert or an alarm for something. And it was like, beep, 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 beep. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I was already on the highway. And so I had to drive 55 miles with a beeping sound.
This happened to me when I was trying to unstuck the leaf in the snow. Every time I went forward or reverse, a beeping would start to let me know that the traction control system was in play. And I'm like, I know that.
I know, it's like, thank
And the
you.
Beeping was killing me.
Yeah, 55 miles of beeping. Once I turned the car off and turned it back on, it was fine. And then after that, I really didn't have any other like glitchy things. So I don't know. I think this is one of those vehicles that is really awesome. But somebody who is tech adverse or a little bit of a Luddite is probably not going to be comfortable in this car initially.
Yeah, it's not selling well yet. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know why the consumers are pushing back. But the prices are higher, I think, than we thought they were going to be.
Well, and I think perhaps people are waiting for Apple CarPlay to come into effect. So my brother-in-law was a diehard Tesla owner. He had probably four or five Tesla Model S's, and he's recently switched into a Lucid Air, and he's like, oh my God, this is so much better. And I was like, why? And he's like, Apple CarPlay. He's like, I didn't realize what I was missing until I got it. And I was like, oh, because he got his first Tesla in 2012, which was really before Apple CarPlay existed.
But you said that they can upload it.
Well, it's going to be an over-the-air update, so the Gravity just doesn't have it yet, but it will.
So that may not be any sort of barrier to sales. But sales are slow.
But people could be waiting until it's there. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't think that's the problem here. I think the prices might be an issue. It's a good-looking thing. It's got the fastback thing going on. Reminds me a little bit of the BMW X6. But we'll see what happens. There's a cheaper model coming called the Pure, and that should start around 70K.
Yeah. I love the way this looks. I love the seat comfort. I love how it drives. I love pretty much everything about it. I thoroughly enjoyed my test period.
Yeah, Rivian,
glitches aside.
Rivian needs something good to sell.
Yeah.
And there's really nothing wrong with the Air except that it is a sedan.
You said Rivian, so Lucid.
Lucid, sorry. the Lucid Air, and that's because it's a sedan, and people don't really buy large sedans anymore.
Yeah.
All right, so that bad boy is on sale now. Mm-hmm. Three trim levels, cheaper trim levels supposed to be coming.
Okay.
And then you said that standard or installed Apple CarPlay is coming as well.
Yeah, as is, I believe, a hands-free driving system. So the Lucid Air, I think, has the highway hands-free driving system.
Does that have a branded name yet?
I don't know.
Lucid system? Okay.
I don't know, because I was in the Gravity that doesn't have it. So that is also coming.
All right, and that is on sale now.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to TJ Campbell of the Tire Rack.
Yes.
About winter driving, winter tires, and some fun stuff he did.
Yes.
All
right.
It's,
winter tires, very, very apropos right now.
Oh, man. All right, stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. And we're talking about a lot of stuff today. We just talked about the Lucid Gravity.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking tires in a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But real quick, just ask me, do me a favor.
Ask you the question?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, are you on social media?
Jill, thank you so much for asking. I am Car Guy Tom.
Okay.
On X and X Twitter and on Blue Sky. I've been a little bit lax lately. I've been busy. So I don't have a bunch of car spotter stuff from this weekend. Although driving this weekend was treacherous.
Yeah, you know, I have a car spotter I still need to post from when I was driving back from Detroit, and I spotted a Honda. I think it was a Civic with fake grass on it everywhere, like literally everywhere. And I was just like, "Is that grass?" It was grass.
I years ago, early 80s, I was in high school, I think. Car and Driver used to do a 10 best issue. They still do it,
mm-hmm.
but they used to do 10 best reader pictures. And I found a Pontiac Astra, which was the same as the Chevy Vega, Pontiac Astra, covered with AstroTurf. Very neatly done.
So Pontiac had an Astra in addition to Saturn having one?
Yes.
Huh?
Years, years, years earlier.
Okay.
A-S-T-R-E, the Astra. And they just needed a cheap car.
Astra, not Astra.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right, on the phone with us, again, I think for the third or fourth time, TJ Campbell. He is tire information and testing manager at the Tire Rack, and always great to talk to. TJ, how are you today?
Oops.
We lost TJ.
Technical.
Well, this is going to be boring if we don't have a guest.
Well, I could talk about the tire samples that I keep in my freezer for just this topic, to talk about the difference between summer tires and winter tires.
I said this would be boring. What are you talking about?
I actually went to the Tire Rack once, and they gave us like tire samples from winter tires all the way to summer performance tires.
Uh-huh.
And if I keep them in my freezer, and every once in a while, my husband's like, I don't need winter tires. And I'm like, this is why you need winter tires. This is what your tires look like in cold, and they, like, you know, are really stiff and unyielding, but like the winter tires, like, flop like they should, and it means they have more grip.
Okay, so the demo here is that winter rubber stays softer.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
For better contact. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's basically the case. Like summer rubber, when we talk about, you know, sport tires and like three season.
Yeah.
Tires.
Well,
yeah.
And it's really funny because, like, you have the winter tires that, like, flop over, and then, like, everything in between, all the way to the summer performance tires, which are, like, stiff as a board at the end.
I once had the, I think it was the Toyota Supra, but it might have been the BMW Z4
mm-hmm.
On summer tires, and there was a freak snowstorm and freeze, and mm-hmm. I had the car, and I had to get to the office for a car swap.
Uh-huh.
Wow, was that slow.
Yeah.
Like, going up hills was menacing.
Mm.
It was just tough, even though, well, this wasn't all-wheel drive. This was rear drive, but it was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it really demonstrates how important tires can be in those conditions.
So I will have to post a picture of my tire samples.
Yep. I guess you will. Man, but it's funny, too, how much, 1974, my dad had a Plymouth Valiant that I drove, I learned to drive on. That just had these big, blocky snow tires in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
And so that got you going, but it didn't do anything for handling. Like the tires could get in, they could chew. And in those days, everyone threw kitty litter or sand in the back of their car because everything was rear-wheel drive.
Right.
You'd throw snow tires in the back, and somehow that was supposed to fix everything.
Yeah.
It did not.
No. I had a friend in college who had a rear-wheel drive Camaro who put sand in the back of her trunk every winter in Missouri. Thankfully, we didn't get a lot of snow in Missouri, but yeah.
I knew a guy, first name Ron, who owned the service station near the one I worked at. And he was very into doing stuff to his cars. And he had family, and he had a daughter my age. And he had these bars that were like made for this purpose that he would bolt into the back of the car. And my friend Chris, his daughter, had a Le Mans, really nice Le Mans with a Pontiac 350. It was a beautiful car. But that was filled with, I think about 240 pounds of these bars in the back of the car. And snow tires in the back. And again, the safety there was that you could get going from a stop. There was nothing about stopping or turning.
But winter tire technology has really progressed since then.
It has. And actually, I believe TJ is with us now. TJ, how are you?
Tom, I think I'm doing better now. Can you hear me this time around?
Yes.
We can hear you. We can
Perfect.
Hear you. TJ, thank you for joining us again. Always good to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about the Tire Rack and what you do there.
Well, Tire Rack, we are, of course, the largest online retailer of tires in the United States. In addition to tires for your car, truck, SUV, we also have a wide selection of suspension products, brake products, lighting, wipers, but more than just the retail side of thing, the part of our company that is, of course, most important to me is our tire testing program.
Yeah.
We are the largest independent tire tester, the largest independent tester of tires. I want to say in the world, it could be just in North America, but regardless, we're way up there, and we are completely objective, unbiased. We just try to find out how each tire performs, cut through the marketing hype to find out what is the right tire for you based on what your priorities are, based on what your vehicle is, how you drive, and where you drive.
And a couple of incredible things. You guys now have remote tire delivery, right, where people can have their tires installed in their driveway or at their place of work. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. It's not in every metropolitan area.
Okay.
But yes, it helps remove a little bit of that uncertainty. You know, there are those that feel like, you know, if you buy tires from the Tire Rack and you bring them to, even though it's one of our recommended installers who says, yes, we happily accept Tire Rack tires, there still sometimes is that little bit of uncertainty. Or just the fact that sometimes it's difficult to get an appointment during normal business hours. I mean, I understand how hard that is sometimes. I work 8 to 6, so that's when everybody's open. So when are you going to go to the tire shop to have your installation done? Well, Tire Rack Mobile Installation will bring the tires to you at home, at work, basically anywhere that has a large enough space that you're going to be, and they will perform your tire installation right there on the spot.
Now, we're going to talk winter tires right now, and it's so apropos. I am looking out the window. Palatine was just hit, Palatine, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. Record amount of snowfall for November.
Oh.
It was a record, 10 inches in snowfall, and it was a mess around here. And I actually went to the TireRack.com to check out the tires on the vehicle I was driving because they weren't awesome. So I checked out the reviews there. And
understandably so.
And the consumer reviews are so useful. It's amazing. Plus your own reviews. So even if you don't use the Tire Rack, go visit the Tire Rack. It's just a wonderful resource. But talking about snow, and it can be really bad sometimes, what do people need to know about driving in the snow, and what do they need to know about their tires regarding driving in the snow?
Of course, you know, like you said, went from, hey, just when you thought it was safe to go out in the winter, you know, we've had a couple of weak winters, let's call them, past couple of years,
yeah.
And that has a tendency to make people get complacent, think, oh, you know, it'll be fine, it's going to continue being fine, and then, bam, record snowfall in November. And I guess the first bit of advice is always inflation pressure. Mm-hmm. In order for your tires to do everything else that they are expected to do, they have to have proper inflation pressure. And as I'm sure you and Jill know, with every 10 degrees of ambient temperature loss, your tires lose about 1 PSI of inflation pressure. And similarly, they are losing about 1 PSI per month, give or take, just from the natural permeation of air through the rubber.
Okay.
So if the last time you checked your tires was in July, and it's now, 5 months later and 50 degrees cooler, there's a chance you've lost significant inflation pressure in your tires from from doing nothing, honestly. So we're getting at that time of year where, maybe your TPMS light comes on in the morning, but then it goes off in the afternoon, and you think, oh, I'm okay, I'm fine. It's just, it's hyperactive or whatever the case may be, But those lights, the legislation that surrounds them says that they only have to come on when a tire is 25% underinflated or more. So there is a big range where your tire is not doing its job properly, and that light isn't even on yet. So they're not a reliable source of information about the inflation pressure in your tire. So absolutely, check it manually. Take it to a tire shop. A place like Tire Rack does it for free. We'll check, we'll inflate, that sort of thing. So make sure that's good. And then just the second thing that I would recommend is check your tread depths. Mm. Tires are not good to the last drop. They do not perform exactly the same when they are brand new as they do when they're worn out. They need tread depth. That is one of the things required of every tire to do the job that you're asking it to do. And as they wear, they get worse at things that require volume of void area to evacuate, mainly being snow and, of course, slush and wet, which we get plenty of, all three of those, this time of year.
TJ, would you say that the average new vehicle, let's just say something a compact crossover, a CR-V, a RAV4, something in that class, a Mazda CX-50, and I'm not picking on these vehicles for any reason, would you say that the factory tires that come on these vehicles are sort of the ideal all-weather situation? Or if you live in someplace like Chicago, Indianapolis, Buffalo, New York, someplace like that, if you should consider something with a little bit more snow acumen?
The latter, absolutely. We, as you mentioned, we have consumer ratings on our website, and these are completely undoctored by us. It is crowdsourced information at its purest. We make sure there's no abusive language. We check IP addresses to make sure one tire manufacturer isn't loading up their tires with good reviews and their competitors with bad reviews. But other than that, it is just purely people's opinions, consumers, drivers' opinions. And man, the original equipment tires almost universally find their way to the absolute bottom of the list. Our ratings are color-coded. Green is good, yellow isn't, and then red and orange or orange and red are terrible. And most replacement market tires, even the ones that are just mid-pack, are primarily shades of green with some yellow mixed in. Those original equipment tires, again, I hate to generalize, but man, we've just seen it so much. They tend to be all yellows, oranges, and reds because people are so unhappy with them. The reason for that generally is original equipment tires are designed, one, with efficiency in mind. Mm-hmm. Every vehicle manufacturer is trying to improve their corporate average fuel economy, and a good way to do that on a large scale is with fuel-efficient tires. And that's great. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that on its own, but there are also always compromises that come with those kinds of changes. And some of those are wet traction, light snow traction, and wear, which are, very important for wintertime use. So if you just got a new vehicle, even though it has brand new tires on it, this is absolutely the ideal time to consider a set of winter tires, because you can put your winter tires on and do what they do best for the winter season, and then switch back to those original equipment tires, which are generally designed to be very pleasant, to pair very well with the characteristics of the vehicle during warm weather, during nice sunny days. Essentially have the best of both worlds with that 1-2 combination. And while your winter tire's on, your original equipment tires aren't wearing. So it extends the life and,
good
of course,
point.
Vice versa.
And if someone buys a set of winter tires from you guys will sell steel wheels to put them on, right? So people don't have to buy a second set of good-looking wheels or have to swap them off the OEM wheels.
Correct. Though, with the increasing prices of just regular steel, a lot of the alloy, styled alloy wheels are just as inexpensive as
wheels
are these days. To be the go-to.
We used to talk about steelies. We thought they were cool
looking. One's going down, and they've kind of met in the middle. Absolutely, yeah. You put your Darth Vaders on for the wintertime.
Yep.
So we've been talking about like winter tires and all season tires, and I was just wondering, and you know, the tires that come with your vehicle. So I was just wondering if you could talk about what the actual differences are between winter tires versus all season tires versus your summer performance tires. I've done a little bit of testing in not nearly as much as you, surely, but I've done a little bit of testing. And as I was talking about when we were before you came on, I have tire rubber samples in my freezer.
You're very proud of these rubber samples.
I'm super proud of these rubber samples in my freezer. But I'm just wondering if you could, you know, I mean, people hear about, oh, winter tires, but I don't, I think that a lot of people, and this is incorrect, think, well, we don't get snow where we are, even though it's cold, so I don't really need winter tires. And that's not a correct statement. So I was just wondering if you could talk about the differences between, that's a long way of asking my question, if you could tell the differences between like all season, summer, and winter tires.
Of course, absolutely. And I know exactly the rubber samples that you're talking about. We still have them here, you know, the ones that weren't given away, and we mm-hmm. use them for all kinds of educational purposes and that sort of thing.
I want rubber samples.
You're correct. Like I mentioned earlier, every tire needs tread depth, but every tire also needs two other things to perform whatever task is being asked of them. They need the right tread compound, mm-hmm. they need the right tread depth, and they need the right tread pattern. And with a winter tire, all three of those characteristics are highly specialized to provide maximum grip in winter weather. And it's not just snow weather. Yeah, I could hear you two talking earlier. I was trying to respond to you. So I heard Tom talking about his snow tires that he used to run. And he's 100% correct. They were just like mild all-terrain tires, right. Essentially. You know, they had the chunky pattern. And compared to, you know, the straight rib bias ply tires of the day, that was a huge improvement. But nowadays, things have advanced so much. So when we think about, you know, summer tires, none of their features, not their depth, not their compound, not their pattern, none of that is designed for cold weather use, or certainly not for ice and snow. All-season tires, they are a compromise. And every tire manufacturer can determine what balance of performance criteria they have for their all-season tires. Some of them are, you know, somewhat winter biased. Some of them are wannabe performance tires that still have just a modicum of winter traction, and some of them try to be well-rounded. So it's really kind of tough to, without testing like what we do, it's difficult to determine where an all-season tire's talents lie. But winter tires, true winter tires, they are completely dedicated to providing the best traction when winter tire is at its worst. So the compounds that they use, like Jill talked about, they remain flexible even at freezing, sub-zero temperatures. That makes them, you know, a good partner with the road. They can key in to the imperfections in the road that allows them to actually grip, as opposed to a lot of all-season tires that are, you know, getting somewhat near their glass transition temperature. They are getting more rigid. They're becoming more rigid at those lower temperatures, that even on a clear road, it does not allow them to grip the surface as well. And then, of course, if you throw any kind of moisture or snow or mm-hmm. ice on top of it, you're in a bad situation. So winter tires are specialized for that, the compounds they use. They also generally have deeper starting tread depths. That helps them deal with the depth. It helps them take big bites out of the snow to get down to the surface where the rubber contact can actually come, or the rubber compound can come into contact mm-hmm. with the road. And then the patterns that they use, they are generally very highly siped. You know, sipes are the little zigzag mm-hmm. cuts in the tire tread pattern that gives biting edges that provide more traction in slippery surfaces, you know, on ice, in snow. There are generally lots of sipes, lots of small independent blocks, and lots of features that are designed to hold on to the snow, because that's another misconception that people have about winter tires and winter tire traction, is the best snow traction comes from other snow that is held in your tire's tread pattern. So you don't want it to clear the way that like a mud tire would. You know, mud tire, if it's caked with mud, you've got no traction. But with a winter tire, you actually want it to hold snow in the pattern to help, like a snowball, to help provide snow-to-snow traction. So, Jill, like you were saying, that even if you don't get snow, winter tires are still very beneficial because they're not snow tires, they're winter tires, and winter isn't one specific weather condition. It is an entire season. It's snow, it's slush, it's ice, it's sub-freezing temperatures, and like we experience here and many other people do, it's a combination of all of those things, often at the exact same time.
Now, I know we're running out of time, but I'm just wondering if you could give a quick counter to somebody who might say, but winter tires are so expensive.
Absolutely. Like we talked about, like I mentioned earlier, you are sparing your all-season tires when your winter tires are in use.
That's so a great point.
If you calculate it out, do the math, which we have done before. If you calculate out, you know, two sets of tires, whether it is one all-season and one winter or two all-seasons, it comes out to about the same amount of total mileage that you will get out of those two sets. Yes, I do understand that you're buying one up front, or you're, I guess in theory we'll say you're buying both of them up front versus, right, you know, spreading them out. So I get that the output is spread differently or is divided differently, but they last about the same amount of time. And you have the ideal traction, the ideal tool for the job, 365 days a year, as opposed to your all-season tires that are a compromise at best when they're brand new, and then you wear them down. And how many people have we talked to that, you know, it's fall, they're going to their tire shop, and it's like, oh, you've got like 5/32nds of an inch left, so it's probably time to replace those tires before going into the winter season, that's completely true, that's accurate. But if you had a set of winter tires, you could just be putting those on, and then you could wait until summer or, you know, spring comes around, then you can put those all-season tires on and wear them out to the point that they are designed to be replaced, not replacing them early while they still have 20% of their life left just because they're not ideally suited for the conditions that you're about to encounter. So that's another thing that people oftentimes don't think about. They overlook it, is that in addition to you're not wearing your all-season tires when they're not being used, they can actually, having winter tires generally will get you another season out of your all-season tires because you don't have to replace them early for, and like I said, rightly so, for winter's, you know, extreme conditions.
That's a great point, and I've never really considered the economics of that, so that's cool. TJ, we are flat out of time. Tell us how we can learn more about the Tire Rack.
Please go to TireRack.com. Check out everything that we have to offer, especially the research and advice section, which is where all of our testing results are. Like I said, we're completely unbiased, just giving people the answers to the questions that they need to help them make the right informed decision.
Sounds good. TJ, thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me again.
All right. That was TJ Campbell of the Tire Rack. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She's Jill. Learned a lot about winter tires.
Yes.
I never thought about the economics like that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
You know, and I've gone to the Tire Rack a couple of times, and I've taken some of their tire testing classes and that kind of stuff. And that was one of the things, the economics of it, that always struck me. And I keep trying to convince my husband that he should get a set of winter tires. And some year I think I'm just going to surprise him with a set of winter tires. And he's like, man, I don't need them. I've got all season tires. And I'm like, no, dude, look at the rubber samples.
Interesting, too. And I feel that something has been lost from the automotive community. We used to see cars in the winter, cool cars, with steel wheels, black steel wheels, cheap slotted steel wheels, and they looked so cool on steelies, right? We used to call them steelies, and they were really badass looking. To learn that those aren't cheaper than aluminum wheels bums me out, because they lose a lot of their appeal, and no one's going to put them on cars anymore. But you used to see them on cool things, like a WRX, something like that. All right, you've got some social media stuff to blurt out.
I do.
We're a little short on time.
Okay, so you can follow me at Jill Simonello or via the hashtag CardAzure on pretty much every social media that is out there. So TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, all the things. And if there's one out there that I'm not on, please reach out to me and tell me where I should be.
All right. Time-saving quiz. Are you ready?
All right.
We're back to the one-minute quiz.
Oh, okay. Okay. Which is very appropriate since we don't have a lot of time today.
No, we don't. And this quiz is perfect. I'm just going to give you a topic and you have to respond in 1 minute.
Oh, got it. Yeah. And so no eating my gingerbread donut and
stalling. It's going to slow you down. No.
It's going to slow me down.
All right. Are you ready? Five questions plus the bonus question. You need three for a win. The bonus question always related to the topic of the day.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
In 1 minute, give me four 25 or 26 car models with three-cylinder engines. Go.
Three-cylinder engines?
Yep. I need four.
Yeah.
You have 55 seconds.
I mean, is it current or?
25 or 26 models.
Yeah, I've got nothing. I literally have no idea. Maybe the Rogue, Nissan Rogue.
That's one. Keep talking. It's like Jeopardy.
So if the Rogue has it, maybe does the Mitsubishi Outlander have a three-cylinder?
No.
You
have half a minute.
Does Mini Club Countryman?
Yeah, not the Countryman.
Well, the Clubman doesn't. Well, Clubman.
Right.
Cooper?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's two. You're halfway there and you have... I can't see the second hand. You have 10 seconds.
I don't know.
You giving in?
Yep.
All right. The Trax, the Trailblazer, the Invista, the Encore GX, the Escape, the Bronco Sport, the Base Mini, and the Rogue.
Okay.
All right. There's more, but those are the ones I gathered.
Okay.
You have no points.
Yeah, no. I'm like, nope, I got nothing on that one.
All right. This might be hard for you today.
Mm-hmm.
In 1 minute, I need you to give me five Scion models, any Scion models ever.
Five?
Five.
Okay.
Go.
XB, TC, XA, XD, FRS.
Okay, there you go. The list is, I think this is every Scion model. IQ, XA, XB, XD, FRS, IA, IM, TC. Mm-hmm. I think that's every one. You got that one. The IA was the Mazda. It was a Mazda 2 that was built for Scion in the U.S.
Yeah, it was the Mazda 2 sedan, and because we got the
really
Mazda 2,
car.
Like hatchbacky thing.
Yeah, it was a really good car. All right, you have 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready?
Yep.
In 1 minute, I need five Land Rover Range Rover models. Go.
Just Land Rover or Land Rover Range Rover?
Land Rover Range Rover.
Well, like you have the Land Rover Range Rover, you have the Velar, Evoque.
Let me see here. Range Rover. Okay. Velar. Okay. Evoque.
I don't
That's
know.
That's four. You need two more.
Well,
Three.
I mean, not a Range Rover, but you have like the Discovery Sport.
You win.
Okay. So you're confusing then. It's just Land Rover models because it's not Land Rover, Range Rover, Discovery. It's Land Rover, Discovery.
It is. Although they have broken up the brand.
Because they have Range Rover, Discovery, and then Defender.
And Defender, yeah.
And so you have the Defender, like, 190, Defender, or Defender 90, Defender 100, whatever. But at any rate, you confused me.
But you got the question.
Points.
No bonus point. I'm going to give you 1 point for that. But we have the Discovery Sport, the Discovery, the Defender, the Evoque, the Velar, the Range Rover Sport, and then the big top-of-the-line Doug Range Rover.
Mm-hmm.
That's everything in the showroom right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This might be tougher. You have 1 minute to tell me to give me three different French car brands. Go.
French.
French. Oui. I just watched The Day of the Jackal.
Ugh.
Anyway.
I mean, I think Renault is French, isn't it?
That's one.
We
have 45 seconds.
I'm like, it's been a while since I've been in... I mean, it's been a couple of years since I've been in France.
30 seconds.
A Citroën French?
There you go. That's two. I need one more French car brand.
Peugeot?
Three. You got it.
Okay.
Others listed here, DS, Alpine, and Bugatti.
Okay. Bugatti is French?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think people think it's Italian.
Yeah.
All right, you've won.
Okay.
Unbelievably, you've won.
Yeah.
All right, next
three
one.
Three-cylinder engines.
All right, in 1 minute, I need you to give me two current Jaguar models. Go.
Are there any? F-Pace?
Uh-huh.
E-Pace? I-Pace?
Yeah, no, you got it. That was a trick question.
Yeah, I'm like, are there any? It's just like F-Pace.
I went to the Jaguar site today, and they still list the E-Pace, though they last sold, the last model year is 24, which means there are E-Paces. Hey, electric car fans.
Mm-hmm.
There are E-Paces sitting around Jaguar lots. The list price
E-Pace is... E-Pace is not electric. I-Pace is electric.
What? That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I meant, yeah. 50 grand. I don't know. They're out there. You can get one. 2024. But the F-Pace is the only car they're actually selling. So that was a trick question. You got it. You have four. Nice job.
All right.
All right. Christmas question for you. Are you ready?
Is it a Hallmark Christmas question?
It is not.
Ugh.
It's a culinary question.
Boo. Okay.
Roasted chestnuts.
By an open fire?
What the heck?
I know, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the song. Nat King Cole sang that song. Written by Mel Torme. I did not know this in 1945. Mel Torme, The Velvet Fog. I don't know anything about roasted chestnuts. I've never seen them. I've never smelled them. I don't know what they are, but apparently somewhere they're a part of Christmas.
I feel like I've had them before.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Brown, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I've had chestnuts in Chinese food.
Mm.
Very crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I need you to tell me which of the following is the fake chestnut variety.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
This is almost like written for a quiz. American, Chinese, European, or Bolivian? One of those is fake.
American, Chinese.
European. Bolivian.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
European.
Yeah, American, Chinese, European, Bolivian. One of them is fake. You're saying European?
It's either European or Bolivian, I think. I don't know.
I like Bolivia in anything.
Bolivia.
Because that's where
Bolivia.
Sundance and... Sundance and... what's his name? Butch Cassidy. Thank
Butch Cassidy, Randy.
Yeah, Butch and Sundance.
Through the window.
Yeah, they go down to Bolivia where everything was supposed to be better. Turned out that wasn't really the case.
Bolivia, then.
Yes. That is the fake.
Only because of your story, because you like all things Bolivian. And I was just like, well, then it's got to be. He just threw it in there because you like Bolivia.
I don't know if I like all things Bolivia. I just like references to Bolivia.
So therefore,
yeah.
I figured that was the fake.
The other real one is Japanese chestnuts. Yeah.
Okay.
So American, Chinese, European, Japanese. If anyone wants to roast me a chestnut and send it to me, that would be sweet. All right. I am signing this for you. Here you go. I wanted to talk about something really quick. We don't have time to get into it, but I've been reading a lot of really weird doom and gloom stuff about the new Jeep Recon.
Mm-hmm.
Seems, and you agree?
I have been, yes.
Oh, you've read it?
Or I've read it, and I'm concerned.
You are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Here's the thing about it. It looked like it wasn't going to come out at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then rather suddenly, it appears at the LA Auto Show.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is, the Recon. For people who don't know, this is more or less an electric analog for the Wrangler.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of open air. It's supposed to be a very serious off-road vehicle, but it's electric.
Yes.
A couple of problems with this thing out of the chute.
Range.
And let's just forget about the fact that this is a bad market for EVs right now because
right.
the tax credit is gone. But range is a problem.
Yeah.
250 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And price is a problem.
Yeah.
Starts at almost 70K.
Yeah.
But the thing I want to see here, I hope to see here, is that Jeep knows better how to build an electric off-roader than does Tesla. Because the Cybertruck has proven to be a massive flop in off-road situations.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't believe me, just go to YouTube.
Yeah,
and
seriously.
and just do Cybertruck fail.
My favorite was trying to watch the Cybertruck go through the Rubicon Trail.
Yeah, a badly beat up car.
Yeah.
It didn't work. It's terrible in the snow. And a lot of this, I think, has to do with tires and weight management.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is profoundly heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But the Recon's not going to be lighter.
No.
So we'll see how this goes. But I'm sort of interested to see if it's a good off-roader. I suspect it is, or Jeep would not have launched it because this is their brand.
Right, and it's trail rated, and it you know I think they're saying it's the only trail rated EV that exists. And my concern is it's built on the Wagoneer S platform and with the same like battery and that kind of stuff. And I've heard not good things about the Wagoneer S. I've been hearing that it has some serious problems, like being bricked.
I have not run into that problem. I drove the Wagoneer S. Mm-hmm. I had it for
Beautiful.
A week.
I love it.
I like the car a lot. It's a little cramped. Mm. I don't say this about a lot of vehicles, but a little cramped up front. I am a big guy, so that's a Tom problem more than a Wagoneer S problem. But I found it to be kind of a classy Range Rover-y kind of vehicle.
Yeah.
Nice interior. Feels mm-hmm. expensive. Looks expensive. Very quick. Rides and handles well. It did not ride as well as I would have liked it to. Like compared to like a Grand Cherokee, which
right.
is a very nice riding vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But a classy EV, I don't know how well that vehicle is going to sell because I'm not 100% sure what it is.
Yeah.
But the Recon, I know what it is. I'm surprised by the doom and gloom, but you have your concerns.
Well, I mean, I think range is a big concern, and I don't know how an electric vehicle can be launched in 2025, 2026 without having more than 300 miles of range, especially when you're talking about a trail-rated EV where, you know, you could be in the middle of a trail and have no range. And need to charge. And so this just, like, I don't know how seriously it can off-road if, you know, because you're in a low range and you're using a lot of power and...
Yeah, I don't think range is an issue off-roading. I think range is an issue using this as a vehicle off the trail. Very, very few people are going to buy a $70,000 EV just for off-roading. Which means they need it for regular use.
That,
and for regular
that's
use.
That's true. Just they're not. But
you're
going
to want more range.
Yeah. So range to me is a big concern.
Yeah. All right. Guess what we did?
We had great conversations.
We did. Good show today. Mm-hmm. Thank you to TJ Campbell of the Tire Rack.
Yes.
Check them out at tirerack.com.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.